afternoon, and welcome aboard. Happy Wednesday to you, John Beginnis with you, News Radio KPK. Hope you're having a great day on this soggy May day. I don't like it, but it went. I'll tell you what, I was up in the El Dorado Hills area this morning, and the thunderstorm was incredible. It was loud, so much so that we had to break up a meeting for people to go reset their car alarms because it was so loud. It was reactivating car alarms. Busy, booming sounds this morning. But now it's calming down, obviously. Things are good. Thank you for dropping by and being part of the conversation this afternoon. We've got a couple things in the hopper to chat about. One has been the subject of some discussion for a few days, but frankly, it keeps falling off the priority stack. But I do want to talk about it. You have no doubt seen this this video of four Sacramento police officers who respond to a home in the city of Sacramento where a front door was left open, and I believe an alarm was activated. I'm not sure about that. Maybe just a neighborhood call. A citizen saw the door open and called in. That homeowner has now filed a complaint because he noticed some things having been moved inside his home. And when he went to check his surveillance system, found that the officers had come and checked the house where the door was found standing open, which is exactly what you'd expect them to do. There's zero violation of law on the part of the officers who did what they did. And by the way, had they gotten in there and found some evidence of criminality on the part of the homeowner, they would be in that home under legal circumstances, and whatever they found would be admissible under the plain view doctrine. Anything they found, if there's a pot grow, or if that's even illegal now, or evidence of other violations of the law, that would be fair game. So that's just as an aside. That was not the case here. But here's what happened, and this is not an uncommon occurrence at all, not one bit uncommon. And I absolutely see nothing wrong with this. It's probably regrettable that there was not some form of communication along these lines. But what happened, I'm going to go out on a limb here and speculate that probably two of these four officers were trainees, and the other two were training officers, and they went in and handled this call. And their job at that point, the job of the senior officers, the training officers, is to kind of debrief afterwards and look for any problems that may have arisen in the manner in which the trainees conducted themselves. And it's not limited to trainees. It's law enforcement is a profession of perpetual analysis, critique, and efforts for better ways of doing business. That's what you want to see, right? And that's true in most professions. If you think about the medical profession, if you show up in the ER with some kind of an unusual set of circumstances affecting your physiology, your body, you've got something going on that's unusual, you're going to first and foremost get medical treatment, as you would hope, but you're also going to be the subject of some enlightenment for others, especially if you happen to visit a university hospital. That's part of what they do. And it should, I think there's a tremendous value and benefit to come from that. So they're going to look at the circumstances under which a patient may come into the hospital in that scenario. They're going to look for specific nuances associated with how an injury may have occurred, with what the first steps for treatment may be, and look for better ways to do business in the future. Same thing's true with any kind of an aviation incident. If there's something that causes a problem, I guarantee you, as you hear about things that don't even show up as a blip on the screen, where maybe there's a temporary loss of cabin pressure in a pressurized cabin commercial aircraft, or there's an electrical problem or something where equipment fails and human beings have to take over a portion of the operation of a commercial aircraft that's normally done automatically, there is a debriefing on that, and there is a revisiting of the exact circumstances to determine what could be done better next time, what was done right in this case, and absolutely positively in law enforcement. Savvy law enforcement officers and their leaders will look at events after they're handled and say, hey, how did this come out? And just because it was successful doesn't mean that there might not be a better way to do business. So it's very, very, very common. In fact, I say it's routine, especially if officers are checking a commercial business of some kind, maybe a little bit less frequent in a residential setting, but still, it's not rare. Now, this homeowner says that he noticed some things being out of order, said he saw scuff marks on the wall and a gate left open. Okay, assuming that occurred in the course of the handling of this call, I don't know if it may have happened, if somebody bumped up against a wall, which could be part of the method used to safely search a home when you want to make sure there's nobody inside there to bring harm to the owners when they return. You may get up close against a wall with leather gun belts and shoes and boots and whatever the case may be. There could be scuff marks incurred. That's a possibility. Perhaps if that was even rose to the level of consciousness on a part of the officers, maybe that could have been communicated that, hey, sorry, we scuffed your wall when we were here. Here's our business cards. Here's how you can reach us. Here's how the city in this case may be inclined to resolve that. And if the gate was left open, okay, same thing. But as far as something bizarre or weird or strange or even unusual about this, no, not so. And just for information, while I don't live in the city of Sacramento, if anybody ever, any law enforcement officer ever finds themselves in my home under those circumstances, they can debrief it as many times as they want, as often as they want. They can do whatever it is they believe they need to do in order to make them more effective at their job the next time around. And I say that knowing that in many cases, the feeling or the belief after a call is handled, after an event is managed, is that everything was done just fine in terms of the outcome. Nonetheless, it's appropriate to go back and analyze and look at it and see if there were mistakes along the way that could be handled differently. How to effectively and safely clear a home is a big part of what police officers do. It's a big, big, big part of the job. Generally speaking, residential units, homes, individual single-family homes are relatively simple to clear. Sometimes you get into a big commercial enterprise of some kind, and it may take a whole team to come in and conduct a thorough search with the assistance of canine, just because you can have so much in terms of square footage and small rooms and unusual accesses and so forth that it's a very difficult task to undertake. And it would make perfect sense to afterwards say, okay, how do we do on this? Let's go back and take another look. How can we do it better? Understand the reaction on the part of the homeowner to think, hey, I didn't sign up for this. No, but you did leave your house in a condition that warranted police response. They came, they did a good job, and they seized the opportunity to retool their trade, to refocus, to look at better ways to do business. I just don't see anything fundamentally wrong with that at all. So oftentimes, I think when there's even a perception of impropriety, an explanation, communication can go a long way. So if I had an observation along the way, leaving a note of some kind would certainly be a good thing to do. And by the way, in general, they should, you know, a note telling them, hey, your door was left open. We checked the house. Everything looked fine. We secured it. And here's who we are. And if you have any questions, feel free to call us. I think that would be highly in order. But in terms of any impropriety with regard to what they did, no, none whatsoever. That is so much a part of the routine for any professional who is involved in ongoing challenges, especially when there is an element of real potential for great bodily injury or death of another person. Based upon how the event is handled, I think it's absolutely fine to go back and do that after the fact. If this person, if this homeowner doesn't want that done in their house, okay, it's their home. Perhaps they don't want police response at all when they, frankly, engaged in some level of recklessness to leave the front door of their home standing wide open, sufficient to prompt a call from the neighbors and a police response. You got thoughts? 916-921-1530, 800-834-1530. Got a lot of things to kick around this afternoon, including just some bizarre things going on in politics. We talked a little bit about the DA's race and the sheriff's race in Sacramento County. There's also a DA's race right across the river and a very, very interesting candidacy there challenging the incumbent district attorney, Jeff Rizik. We'll talk about that and other things going on in the news in terms of public policy and politics. All that right after this. Don't go away.
First, for breaking news, 24/7.
Depend on it.
News Radio KFBK.
Welcome back. Thanks for staying on board. John McGinnis with you on News Radio KFBK. What do you think? By the way, how would you feel if you, and I'm sorry, this may sound critical of the person who's made a complaint now against the police. I don't mean it to be overtly critical, certainly, but if you kind of did a bonehead thing and left your front door open or left it in such a way as the wind blew it opened And the neighbors were good neighbors. They called the police. They come check your house out. And while they're there, they realize, hey, you know what? We need to, because they have a trainee with them. Or by the, my sense is probably multiple trainees. Let's go back and kind of revisit this. Let's see if we can hone our skills and use this as an opportunity. Since we're here for a legitimate purpose, search this house, make sure it's safe. And there may have been conversations along the lines of, hey, did you get everything? Did you really get that one-bedroom closet? Are you absolutely certain there's no one in there hiding out? Let's go back in and take another look. Is that problematic? I really don't see it as a problem at all. It certainly does not violate any law. The homeowner created the exigency when they left that door in a condition that that warranted a call to the police and a response on the part of the police. That's time for them to go in. And just, again, as an aside, there's no evidence of criminality here on the part of the homeowner. But if there was anything unlawful going on there, whatever the officers saw with her inside there is fair game. That would be constitutionally available for evidence against the homeowner to show evidence of criminality based on the plain view doctrine. So think about that, by the way, before you leave your home in an insecure manner. More importantly, what do you think? Do you have a problem with them seizing this opportunity as a means by which to perhaps do their job a little better the next time? And especially if, in fact, my assessment is correct, and it may not be. These may be four seasoned officers. I'm highly inclined to believe that it's at least one, maybe two trainees, and they're working at doing their job a little better. I think that's a very, very positive thing. Communication along the lines definitely would be an added benefit, no doubt about it. But in terms of calling this improper, I can't quite get there. 916-921-1530, 800-834-1530. Let's check in with Tracy in Sacramento. Tracy, good afternoon. Welcome to the conversation. Thank you for holding on.
Hello.
How are you?
Good. How are you? Thank you. First
terrific.
Time caller.
Oh, thank you. Welcome.
I am 100% law enforcement, always have been, whether it's CHP, sheriff's, police, corrections, parole. I understand the whole situation as far as the officers going there, responding, clearing the house. But I think if it was my house, I would have a problem having it used as like a training facility. Once the house was cleared, they should have left a note or some explanation as to why they were there. There's also the legality of what if there was any damage done to the house other than scuff marks.
Yeah.
Would they have been responsible for it? And yeah. If that homeowner never had a camera installed, he would have never known whether it was law enforcement or some criminal that yeah. broke into his house.
Yeah, I can't argue the fact that I think there's a benefit, and I think it's a frequent mistake on the part of law enforcement. They know what they know, and they assume that the rest of the world perceives what the information upon which they're acting. But yeah, I think it'd be an added benefit. In fact, whether they went back in to revisit the home, and I don't know exactly how that happened. Obviously, I'm guessing, which is probably high risk. But my guess is they came outside the house and say, "Okay, how'd you feel about that?" Which I think we did a good job. Well, let's go back and check. Are you absolutely sure every nook and cranny was caught? Are you on a scale of 1 to 10? How certain are you that there's nobody in that house? Well, okay, let's go take another look. Probably something along those lines happened, I would be inclined to believe. That certainly is someplace I have been many, 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 many times. And in fact, on at least one occasion, went back in, and this was not in a residence, but in a commercial building, went back in and found, guess what? There was somebody hiding inside that structure. So there's no such thing as an absolutely perfect search, and reasonable efforts to improve those skills and get closer to 100% success, I think, is laudable. Regardless of whether or not that portion of it took place, I think there's a tremendous benefit to come from leaving a note saying, "Dear homeowner, we were here. We checked your home. We did our best to secure it and determine that nobody is here improperly. If you have any questions, please call us."
And I think that would have resolved the whole issue if they would have done that, because I, number one, would appreciate them coming out and clearing my house and making sure it was safe. I've been through dynamic entry training with BHP, and I mean, there's so many blind spots and so many areas where someone can hide. But, you know, on the same note, I wouldn't want my house used as a training ground when there's, I think, other ways of gaining that training.
Yeah, well, that's where you and I might disagree. They can use my house anytime they want for that, especially if they're there because I did the knucklehead thing of leaving the front door open or leaving it improperly latched where it couldn't, where it would be inclined to blow open from the wind. I think it's good. I think it's a net positive. But, hey, good people can disagree on it, right? And appreciate the call very much nonetheless. Let's check in with Sean in Rancho Cordova. Sean, good afternoon. Welcome to the conversation.
Hi, John. My concern would be doing training within my house. I understand that law enforcement came for a valid and legitimate reason. Once they were done with that reason and left the residence, they should not have came back in to do training. There's inherent dangers that come along with training. They're done in facilities. They're done at different places. They're done with instruction. What if one of these officers did charge a weapon during training? Who's liable for the damage to the house?
Well, regardless, the police in the city be liable for that. But if there's any belief, any perception on the part of, especially a training officer, at the conclusion of that first search, hey, did we get everything? Let's go. Let's make sure. Or how confident are you asking their colleague, their trainee, if in fact it was a trainee? How confident are you that there's absolutely nobody in there improperly? Well, perhaps there's a question. Let's go back in and get it done right. I just don't see a problem with that. But and in terms of liability, that's always going to be theirs. Always will be the liability of the not only the officer themselves, but the entity that employs them in terms of liability thereafter. But good point, Sean. I appreciate the call very much. Much more conversation coming up right after this. Don't go away.
Breaking news as it happens, plus traffic and weather together every 10 minutes. The KFBK Morning News tomorrow with Amy Lewis and me, Dan Nitchinson, 5 to 9.
Welcome back. Thanks for staying on board. John McGinnis with you, News Radio KFBK. Shifting gears here a little bit, I want to talk about there's a number of political contests in the state of California and, in fact, in other states as well, in which people are challenging in the political process sitting district attorneys who have amassed at least a decent reputation for law and order. And just to kind of remind you from a civics lesson perspective, our system of justice is a modified adversarial system. It's generally an adversarial system, but there is a slight modification to that because, you see, the legal counsel representing the accused in criminal court in due process of law has an absolute duty to represent their client, to represent their constitutional best interests, and to serve their purposes as effectively as they can. The other side of the contest, if you will, the prosecution, is in the business to seek justice. There is no motivation whatsoever for a prosecutor to convict an innocent person. There's no financial benefit to it. There's no pride in it. In fact, it's considered a horrible mistake when it happens. However, on the defense side, which is an absolutely critical part of our process, our system of justice, you have to have competent counsel representing the accused. But there are other motivating factors to give them zeal in the defense of their client. They're compensated for it oftentimes and make significant amounts of money. So I say it's a modified adversarial system. The prosecution they're not only not encouraged or motivated or enticed to convict an innocent person, but rather there's a shame associated with the mistake along those lines. And in either case, it's ultimately the trier of fact, the jury or the judge, who makes the decision as to the guilt of the accused. So to have people who are predisposed to represent the accused and defend those who are charged with criminal crimes, I see as a fundamental flaw in logic. You wind up having nobody show up to represent the state from a prosecutorial perspective. Well, in the county of Yolo, right across the river from Sacramento, there's a challenger to the district attorney. Jeff Rizik is the DA, and by way of full disclosure, I know and like and respect Mr. Rizik very, very much. But there are a couple of things that have come to light recently. A group of veterans in Yolo County, law enforcement and elsewhere, in fact, at least one member of the Board of Supervisors there, have pointed out the fact that the challenger to Mr. Rizik, Dean Johansson, will not stand up and say the Pledge of Allegiance. In fact, at a Woodland campaign debate, Mr. Johansson refused to say the pledge during the opening ceremony. a group of veterans who wrote a letter and signed it accordingly. I believe it's 17 or 18 of such, saying that we appreciate people's views on the pledge, and that may differ. However, some choose to not utter the words "under God" as a private person's choice, not say the pledge at all. This is their business. Mr. Johansson, however, is now a candidate for public office, and the pledge raises relevant issues. And I think that's very true. He is also associated with a religious group, a Quaker church, that refuses to take an oath. And there's a it's a major part of the job of district attorney in the course of filing pleadings and actually establishing, making complaints, criminal complaints for the purpose of prosecution, to swear out an oath or affirmation. And if he's not willing to do that, he simply could not meet the fundamental obligations of the job. So I would absolutely welcome his response, but and have reached out to his campaign with no success. But I've got to wonder what that what his point of view is, how this all fits into this. So I go back and look at an article published back in March of 2005. And there was an anarchist meeting in Sacramento, and a group of local anarchists were gathered there. Among them was Mr. Johansson, now a candidate for district attorney in Yolo County, then a civil rights lawyer. He said that in this meeting, he disclosed that he had represented all 70 of the persons arrested during the June 2003 ministerial conference held in Sacramento. You may remember that. It was a big, big deal here. And in fact, I arrested some of those 70 people personally. So if it's true that he arrested every single, that he defended every one of them, I would have crossed paths with him. I don't remember that. He indicated that most of the charges were related to the city's controversial parade ordinance. During his talk, he recalled the moment he became radicalized. He said it was at a 1980s Berkeley demonstration, he said, where someone next to him got his head split open by the police. He identifies himself as a former district attorney in Tulare County, at that time in private practice. He described some of his own experiences representing clients facing political charges. He also went to some pains to highlight the difference between what he characterized as practical rights versus academic rights. In other words, what you can expect versus what you are legally entitled to. As an example, he recounted being pulled over in Davis and being triangulated by officers out to find out something irregular in his car. The situation, he said, changed immediately when his wife, alerted by a cell phone call, arrived with a video camera. He went on to say, nothing can combat the slide of our rights toward totalitarianism better than guerrilla video. His advice to the crowd, do not talk to the police, he warned, emphasizing that simply because civil rights are spelled out in the Constitution, they cannot be taken for granted. He went on to criticize the police, and now he is seeking to be the county's chief law enforcement official. I have a hard time coming to terms with that. First of all, again, he is absolutely entitled to his position on such issues, but for people to consider him as a possibility to exercise the duties associated with the chief prosecutor in a county, I find shocking, because you would wind up in a situation where you in effect have nobody representing the state in criminal prosecutions, because you have somebody who is predisposed to the defense side as well as whomever may be paid specifically to represent the defendant. And it's like having the home team not put any players on the field. Both sides of the team are looking for the same outcome in terms of victory going to one side. You got thoughts on this? Do you find it unusual? Do you find it suspicious? Do you feel comfortable with the idea of apparently an avowed anarchist holding such an office in your community? Now, this happens to be Yolo County, but this trend is seems to be deepening and spreading across the state of California and beyond. But how does that work in our modified adversarial system of justice? You got thoughts? 916-921-1530, 800-834-1530. Let's check in with Bob in Woodland. Bob, good afternoon. Welcome to the conversation, sir, and thank you for holding on.
Hi, John. How are you today?
I'm terrific. Thanks. How are you, sir?
I'm good. Thank you for taking my call. First-time caller.
Thank you very much. Welcome.
Thank you.
So what do you think?
I did just a basic bit of research while I was on hold. And I mean, the issue that we had become really concerned about was kind of his, incident with the Davis police on domestic violence in his household, and, you know, essentially like throwing his kids out in the street at night, and, you know, his daughter saying, you know, he grabbed her by the neck and, you know, basically took her down the hallway. If you read the police report, it's on a, there's a link to a organization called Crime Unit, Crime Victims United, that has a police report. But it's like, you know, he kicks his son in the chest, and it's like this whole level of anger. And his son says, you know, that, you know, he had regularly, you know, slapped him around and used physical violence. I'm like, holy mackerel, that's the person that we're going to put in charge of our, you know, our criminal defense thing. And then there's also, he did a report here, did a interview with a outfit out of Davis called the Vanguard.
Yes.
And in that, he admitted that he had been fired from the Tulare County position. So it's kind of like he was a deputy district attorney at one point, but got fired for a number of reasons. And, you know, so when I look at the pedigree, I go, oh, my gosh. We couldn't find a better candidate. It just is, you know, I mean, it just doesn't seem like there's anything to even run against the you know, Rice in this case. It just seems like we have a better candidate already.
Yeah, I frankly I am biased, but I couldn't agree with you more. I think the incident you mentioned, that which I haven't even gotten to yet, but the reality is there's a whole host of issues. And again, you look at his own personal behavior associated with his improper conduct as a father, as a parent, and that's that I think speaks for itself. But his overall fundamental philosophy is such that it would be like you hiring an attorney to represent you in a civil matter, but hiring an attorney who is more inclined to be supportive of your opponent in litigation, because his ideals, his philosophies are definitely more in the camp of the defense, which, again, I respect and believe is absolutely appropriate and a critical part of our system of justice. But to have all players for a conflict in litigation representative of the same philosophy that supports the defense, I think leaves the people with a concern about criminal justice without representation. So, Bob, I appreciate the call very, very much. We've got to take care of some other business very quickly. We'll be back with more calls right after this. Don't go away.
Sacramento's news, traffic, and weather. News Radio KFBK.
Welcome back. Thanks for staying on board. John McGinnis with you, News Radio KFDK, talking about Dean Johansen, candidate for district attorney in Yolo County. I think he's a bad pick. And the matter that the prior caller referenced is one I was going to disclose as one actually been released by Crime Victims United. It's a police report from the Davis Police Department that recounts an incident in which Mr. Johansen allegedly assaulted his own son, kicking him in the chest. And pulled his daughter, a 17-year-old at the time, out of the house by her hair. This goes back to 2007. One of the interesting components of all this is the man who he's running against now used his discretion, that would be Jeff Rizik, used his discretion and recognized a better fit for this case, and actually decided to not file a formal criminal complaint, but instead allowed the matter to be handled through an alternative interventional process. It certainly doesn't indicate that no crime was committed by any stretch of the imagination. In fact, it sounds as though there was credible evidence of criminality, yet there was an alternate resolution that was offered. That speaks to his character. But separate and apart from that, in terms of his attitude and philosophies, is that somebody you want in that critical office? And I say it's tantamount to having nobody in that office if you have both sides. And again, I absolutely respect both sides. But if you have the prosecutor and the defense bar of the same state of mind, same ilk, same attitude towards corruption, prosecution, is that a problem? Let's get your thoughts. Let's check in with Daniel in Stockton. Daniel, good afternoon. Welcome to the conversation. Thanks for hanging on.
Hey, John. Man, it was your statement about the prosecutor not having any motivation to push forward, even when evidence is starting to mount that maybe this person is innocent. You know, I just don't agree with that. I think this case, what you're talking about here, with your question, is a perfect example. Just because we know about this guy being a bad apple, how many bad apples do we not know about that are, you know, sheep's, you know, they're sheep, wolf in sheep's clothing?
Yeah.
And, you know, they're out there now pressing forward, even when evidence may not be credible, but because of bias, racial bias, whatever the issue is with that individual on.
Well, clearly that's a violation of their ethical obligation, to be sure, if that happens. But the system that's in place to address that is they don't get to make the decision. They advance the matter to the trier of law, the jury typically, sometimes the court. The trier of fact. The court serves as the trier of law. And that's where the decisions are made. It's the prosecutor that brings the case forward with representation of counsel for the other side. And that's how our system works. But if you have both sides that are predisposed to the same outcome who don't want to file, notwithstanding evidence of the guilt of the accused, I think you have nobody representing the best interest in the criminal justice system. So that's my thoughts. I just can't imagine how that could be beneficial to anyone. Daniel, I appreciate the call very much. You're going to be it for the day. That's it for me, as you can tell by the sound of the music. But stick around, because the lovely and talented Kitty O'Neill is coming up next with the afternoon news. I'll be back with you tomorrow. Have a spectacular evening. So long.